as Sandy passes, we've got a flood of economic data to talk about. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is the 1st of November. Happy Thursday. We'll get an update from the Jersey Shore. And no, unfortunately, it's not Snooki or the Sitch, but still very compelling voices of folks who have been through quite an ordeal there. And we'll make our way through the data flying at us today before the big one hits tomorrow, the last monthly jobs report before the election.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts designed with convenient features to help reach savings goals. To learn more or open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
The cleanup is underway in the eastern U.S. Transportation is sputtering back to life. Even some subway lines in New York are back today. Finding an open gas station is reportedly a problem. Depleted fuel supplies and lack of power are the culprits there. The latest number I've got is 4.6 million people still without electricity. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has made his way to the Jersey Shore, and Dan is with me from Atlantic City now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Dan, what's it like where you are, both the weather today, I guess, and for the local folks who have just been through this pretty extraordinary experience?
Well, you know, Jeff, I mean, it's interesting. It's this beautiful day. The surf is calm. But basically, really, what you've got is you've got a lot of power still out for lots and lots of people here. It's quieter than it usually would otherwise be. And, you know, I spoke to Victoria Swinton, 56-year-old woman, this morning, and you can hear from her how big of an impact this has had on both the community and the community psyche.
The last 2 days hasn't been so good, you know. My prayers was going out to the whole town, you know what I'm saying? This was a kind of nasty one.
So, Dan, she's clearly pretty exhausted from the process. Do you get the sense that people are just kind of beaten down? Are they angry? What's the mood?
You know, I was talking to a store owner who said, we haven't gotten the newspaper in 4 days. Forget about cable. Forget about the internet. I mean, people aren't even getting the newspaper. So people literally are sort of shut off here, Jeff. I was talking to one man this morning, Michael Modugno, and he told me that he's a contractor and he's trying to go to and from work, but it's hard because there are barricades here and it's hard to get in and out of the city, and he's really frustrated.
The idea is they stop you from going in and out, which I understand the part of the looters and traffic and debris, but if you live here, they should give you a ticket or a card that allows you to go out and come back in time of emergency like this.
As you look around at the businesses and people trying to resume normal activity, does this feel like a quick bounce back for the economy there, or a long, drawn-out process to set things right again?
Well, I know that the casinos are eager and anxious to open. I think this is just one of very few times that the casinos have ever been closed, and clearly Atlantic City relies on the income from the casinos. You've got a lot of people who are still trying to figure out what's up with their homes. I mean, I spoke to some people at the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlantic City, and they haven't even had a chance to go home. I think there's still a lot of assessing that needs to go on before any clear answers emerge.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein on the New Jersey Shore. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, we've got a lot of data to look at today with Wall Street back open. Of course, corporate earnings have resumed with gusto, and I'll share a few of those in a minute or two. As far as government data, initial claims for unemployment insurance dropped last week, and productivity growth is slowing down. Now, that sounds like kind of a bad thing at first, but in fact, many folks see it as potentially a good omen for hiring. We've also got new private jobs reports from ADP and from Challenger Gray and Christmas. So let's get into this with Diane Swank. She is chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first on employment, the payroll processor ADP says U.S. companies added 158,000 jobs in October. Pretty strong. But then we have Challenger Gray and Christmas saying job cuts surged last month. So what's the story we should believe here?
Well, what we're seeing is employment is still trying to sort of make its way back. September jobs numbers were revised down, and much of the gains in the month of October were in the service sector. That's good news. That's before we saw the interruptions from Sandy. And we also saw a gain in construction jobs more than offset a loss in the manufacturing sector, and I think you're seeing some of those large-scale manufacturers announce layoffs, which are picking up in some of the Challenger Christmas and Gray and Christmas numbers. In fact, one of the reasons the name of the firm has Christmas in its title is that as we get into the fourth quarter, that's when you start to see the layoffs of large firms pick up, although it may not correlate well with what's going on in the underlying economy. All of the 1990s, we saw large-scale corporate layoffs rise even as we were generating a lot of jobs.
So steady as she goes on the jobs front, more or less, is what I hear you saying.
Unfortunately. We'd like it stronger than she goes.
For better and for worse, yeah. Let's talk productivity here. Productivity in the U.S. seems to be slowing down. Companies aren't able to squeeze as much from existing workers. Could that be good for hiring, right?
Well, in ideal world, yes, it would be good for hiring. Unfortunately, some of the slowdown in productivity, particularly driven by that decline in productivity in the manufacturing sector, that was a real unusual thing to see with decline in jobs in manufacturing as well. You're seeing profit margins being squeezed. And when profit margins are being squeezed, and we've seen some of the fourth quarter results disappoint, that isn't exactly conducive to hiring as much as we'd like. So I think you're really seeing a very mixed picture out there with many of the large companies exposed internationally having a harder time than companies that are exposed nationally, and they're not as willing to pick up their hiring when they're seeing all the speed bumps in places like Europe and China.
Sure. Diane Swonk, thank you. Chief Economist at Mesro Financial.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Well, folks are bouncing back in various ways across the East Coast, and a bit of a bounce back today on Wall Street as well. The Dow at this hour is up more than 1%, as is the S&P 500. The NASDAQ, though, is leading the way, up almost 1.5%. Investors may be cheered by the fact that consumer confidence hit a four-year high in October, or by the fact that U.S. manufacturing expanded in October for the second straight month. The Institute for Supply Management says new orders and production were up. Now, that's notwithstanding, of course, the productivity questions that Diane Swonk talked about a moment ago. We got lower profits this morning from ExxonMobil, the country's second most valuable company. Earnings were down from a year ago on a drop of more than 7% in their oil and gas production. Pfizer says weak Lipitor sales and lower sales in emerging markets hurt their profits last quarter. And Kellogg says things are looking up for the cereal company ever since it bought Pringles earlier this year. Once you pop, you can't stop buying Pringles, evidently, and that's good for Kellogg's. Tomorrow, we will bring you kind of the granddaddy of these economic data releases, at least in these particular economic times. The Labor Department puts out its monthly employment report and a new unemployment rate. It is the last update before the election, and it'll undoubtedly shape the way some undecided voters decide to lean on Election Day. We're going to get some insight on that from today's Attitude Check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Attitude Check is our weekly partnership with Gallup. And Editor-in-Chief Frank Newport is here as usual. Hello, Frank.
Good morning.
First of all, Gallup calculates its own unemployment rate, which you think improves upon the one that we get from the federal government. How do you do that?
Well, we do it as close as we can to how the government, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, does theirs. We interview 30,000 people a month for another purpose, but we add on questions which we try to make as similar to the government's as possible and try to look at their formula and try to calculate our unemployment rate similar to how the government does it.
Are there aspects of the Gallup unemployment rate that you think make it more reliable in some ways than the official one that we talk about so much?
Well, I hate to say more reliable, but here's two differences. One is we're continuous, so we're constantly updating the 30-day average every day of the month so we can see the trends, not just having to wait for one to come out at the end of the month. And second, we don't go through all the gyrations that they do to adjust. There are seasonal adjustments of both their participation rate and also the unemployment rate. We just say, here's the flat rate that we're computing, and then also we will use what we think their adjustment might be, but we're a little less complicated than they are, which may be a good thing.
So we'll get the government's number tomorrow. What does Gallup's information today tell us about the job situation that people will have in their brains on Election Day?
Well, we think it could be a positive report. Now, when we look at the trend on our unemployment rate versus the government's adjusted rate, theirs is quite smooth and ours kind of moves up and down with more gyrations. But generally, we have the same trends, and both our unadjusted and our adjusted rates for October show a decline in the unemployment rate, fairly significant decline. Now, again, there's not a one-to-one correlation, but if we have to guess based on our trends, we would say it would not be out of the question that the government would report a drop from 7.8%. Tomorrow, even though the consensus is that it'll stay the same or maybe even go up a point.
So another relatively strong report, at least compared to the economy we've been experiencing in recent months.
That's certainly what we're showing in our unemployment calculations here at Gallup. If they don't show it at the government, maybe they've got some unusual adjustments they're applying this month. But certainly it looks to us like it's possible it could be a strong unemployment report tomorrow.
All right, a glimpse into Gallup's well-informed crystal ball. We'll find out. Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup. Thank you.
My pleasure.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank, FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts with a competitive variable interest rate and convenient access via phone or web. Link your existing bank accounts without switching banks. To learn how this FDIC-insured high-yield savings account can complement your savings goals and to open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
A magazine editor goes on trial in Greece today in a case related to that country's debt crisis. Kostas Vaxavanis published a list of prominent Greeks who allegedly evaded their taxes. Now he is accused of breaking privacy laws. From our European desk in London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Tax evasion is one of the main reasons that Greece is in its current mess, so the editor's revelations are embarrassing, especially as the government imposes more austerity on ordinary people. Vaxavanis published a list of 2,000 Greek politicians and business people with Swiss bank accounts. The list came originally from a bank whistleblower. It was sent to the Greek authorities 2 years ago, but was never investigated. Through an interpreter, Vaxavanis told the BBC that he isn't the one who should be on trial.
The three last governments have lied and have made a mockery of the Greek people with this list. They were obliged to pass it to Parliament or to the justice system. They didn't do it, and they should be in prison for it. But instead, they think I should be the one in prison.
He could face up to 5 years in jail. His supporters say this is not just shooting the messenger, it's more like using a big bazooka to silence him. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And as we wind down here, a little item from Stephen's neck of the woods. Guy Fawkes Day is coming up in England. And the tradition there, if you don't know, is for towns to burn a giant effigy of Guy Fawkes, the guy who tried to blow up Parliament in 1605. But in recent years, the town of Edenbridge in particular has been getting creative. They've been subbing in celebrities who have fallen into disfavor. So this year's dishonorary bonfire effigy in Edenbridge, drumroll please, Lance Armstrong. The giant Lance has already been built, holding a sign saying, for sale, racing bike. He will go up in smoke on Monday. And finally, neuroscientists at the University of Wisconsin believe that they have found the world's happiest man. At least he's the happiest that they've ever tested. For a dozen years, the researchers have been strapping hundreds of little sensors to people's skulls and then measuring gamma waves. So gamma waves are thought to be linked to consciousness, attention, memory, they tell us. Anyway, collectively, these are the best measure science has, I guess, for happiness or contentment. So enter Matthew Ricard. He is a French molecular geneticist who took off for the Himalayas in the 70s to become a Buddhist monk. And according to the AFP news service, Ricard's happiness level is pretty much off the charts. And at the time he set that happiness record, he was meditating on compassion. Isn't that nice? Something to keep in mind as we head toward what I think, just have a hunch, it's going to be kind of a bruising election next week. That's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.